Jurassic Park 3, Spinosaurus Potter, by Gojira 126, read by Sam Gabriel, based on the works of Michael Crichton and J.K. Rowling. Chapter 11. Lily watched as the scientists worked diligently, while the rest of the team set up base camp near the tree line, ensuring it was resistant to flooding. She grinned as she turned and saw Harry resting in the sand under the afternoon sun. Dressed in lighter, more open attire to combat the heat, Lily walked toward one of the tents where computers and equipment were set up to scan the samples of the creature her son killed. She approached one of the squibs who had been working under Dr. Wu, noticing the woman's frown as she studied the data on the InGen computer.
"This is very weird," the woman muttered, typing at the keyboard, her frown deepening.
Lily's curiosity was piqued.
"Is something going on?" she asked.
The woman looked up, blinking in surprise.
"Lady Potter, I'm Giselle Dufresne, genetic analysis. I've been running comparisons on these samples, and they're nearly a perfect match for Mosasaurus."
Lily's brow furrowed.
"But that's an aquatic creature, right?"
Dufresne nodded.
"Very much so. Fins, flippers, not legs. But according to what I'm seeing here,"
she indicated the computer screen with some agitation,
"that thing outside is a mosasaur. But it can't be."
Lily tilted her head, processing the information.
"Couldn't it be some form of extreme mutation?"
"Lady Potter, InGen never made any mosasaurs."
That fact sank in for several seconds as both women stared at the readout. Dufresne grimaced, clearly unsettled.
"This shouldn't be alive. Something is going on and it's beyond my expertise. I'm way out of my depth here, ma'am."
"Good thing the Potters spot both InGen and Biosyn," Lily commented, nodding toward the group of scientists from Biosyn working nearby.
"Work with them to figure it out."
The scientist grimaced but nodded, moving over to discuss the issue with her colleagues. Lily stepped out of the tent, adjusting to the bright sunlight once again before walking over to her son. She intended to enjoy a few hours of rest with him before the real work began in earnest. She didn't know when she would get another chance to rest properly. The camp buzzed with activity, a mix of excitement and apprehension. The presence of the ancient creature had everyone on edge, yet also filled with a sense of discovery. Lily's thoughts drifted to the enormity of their find and the implications it held. As she settled down next to her son, she couldn't help but feel a mix of pride and worry. This discovery could change everything they knew about prehistoric life and their own modern world. If Johnston was being completely honest, when he got hired as part of the crew assigned to Isla Cranio, he didn't expect to need so much extra equipment. Only a few days into this expedition, he was starting to understand why people were fearful of the place known as Skull Island. As he gathered his gear, specifically made by both Biosyn and InGen R&D, he wondered what had motivated the Potters to buy this island. Sure, he was a nomad born and educated like every other American, but buying an island radiating magic? That didn't sit well with him as he made his way to the helicopter on the aircraft carrier's top deck. Commissioned by Biosyn, this ship had all the latest technology and was a floating science lab for whatever they brought back. However, until a safe port was established, the only way on or off the island was by helicopter or plane. Climbing into the helicopter, he secured himself and checked his weapon before the machine lifted off. He was the last aboard, watching the aircraft carrier shrink as they headed towards the island. He looked out of the open sides of the helicopter as more choppers made their way to find a suitable beach to create a dockyard.
"Red team,"
a sharp voice filled his headset.
"Listen up. The boss wants this to be a clean mission, so no hero business. Also, you're only allowed to shoot if the wildlife actively tries to kill you. However, the suits have repelling wards that should discourage any predator from being too curious."
Johnston nodded, having been briefed before signing on to this mission. Soon the chopper hovered over the landing zone and the others rappelled out of the vehicle. He went last, landing with practiced ease before bringing his weapon up. All around him was sand, rocks of various shapes and sizes, and a smattering of trees that looked like Californian palms. He shook his head and moved with his partner, a young woman carrying more of the specialized equipment in her bag. They moved east from their landing point, climbing over rocks battered by millions of years of ocean waves. Johnston couldn't help but notice the water was crystal clear, allowing him to see schools of fish and other marine life. Then he saw the long neck of what should have been an extinct species of plesiosaur rise from the water. He gaped in shock as it looked at him with large eyes, its mouth filled with long, interlocking teeth, tilting its head at him curiously. "Is that a plesiosaur?" his partner asked in wonder, also stopping to stare in awe. "Looks like one." The plesiosaur hissed, like pressure being released from a tank, its mouth opening to reveal jaws that widened into a small net-like pouch. It was similar to a pelican's. Thousands of pointed teeth covered the flesh of both upper and lower jaws, creating an inescapable trap for any fish. It twisted its head around like a massive snake, plunging into the water to pull up a fish as large as a man. Its teeth stabbed into the fish's scaly hide as it lifted its head to swallow its catch whole.
"Let's get moving," Johnston said, elbowing his partner. "We've only got a limited amount of time before our ride comes back."
Watching the oddly dressed newcomers wandering with their metal devices was an interesting way to pass the day, in Chell's opinion. The native Iwi woman, in her early 20s, observed the humans before disappearing into the lush fauna of her home. Her loincloth flapped behind her as she swiftly ran back to the secret passage leading to the Iwi village. Thankfully, she could avoid the inhuman primitives to whom the Iwi were distantly related before the island folded into its skull shape. She entered the thin crack quickly, hissing as the snout of a Venatosaur peered in. Fortunately, the crack was too narrow for the dinosaur to follow. Chell ran all the way back to the village, not stopping until the setting sun cast its radiant light upon her dark tanned skin. She slowed down as she approached the stone buildings of her village, nestled at the bend of a slow, vast river of crystal clear water. The river known as Titi Efron, or River of Life's Blessings in her people's tongue, was teeming with fish during the spawning season. Fish swam upstream to the basin the Iwi had dug generations ago for breeding, making them easy to catch for food. Chell remembered her first spawning season catch with her father, struggling with the huge fish that was larger than her, flopping against her as she carried it to the buildings to be dried and cooked. Pulling herself from her memories, she stopped before the chief's hut and gently rapped her knuckles on the finely carved wooden door.
"Honored elder," she asked reverently.
"Come in, Chell."
The wizened old man smiled up at her from his place by the central fireplace.
"Tell this old chief what you saw."
Chell did as asked, recounting her observations while the chief listened intently. When she finished, he spoke.
"So, modern man has discovered our home. About time, I see."
He chuckled at Chell's confused expression.
"Young Chell, I know you've wanted to see what lies beyond the protective barriers of our ocean waters since you were young. You might get the chance to leave. But there is so much preparation needed before you can see the modern world. There is trouble from our distant cousins on the darker side of the skull."
"Hazel Cranio doesn't have many peaceful patches,"
Lily heard from the radio set she had put on.
"Mostly due to the island's shape and rather unorthodox magical properties. I suggest the far side of the island, as it seems to have had the least damage and more locations suitable for a beach base and planes for our base camp without harming the environment."
Lily nodded to herself and asked,
"Was there any sign of human life around?"
The radio crackled with static before the man on the other end replied,
"Teams 13 and 28 spotted ruins on the darker side of the skull, closer to where we are, ma'am. The ocean slams into the cliffs on that side while it's calm on the other side. Given the carrier is parked several dozen miles away from the lower jaw of the skull, it can easily see both extremes."
Lily pondered for a moment before asking,
Have any of the survey teams reported back yet? I want a full report on the geography before we set up and fortify a base of operations.
We're already getting the first few reports in, but one has me puzzled. Private Hudson reported seeing a massive humanoid ape shadow as the sun was setting. He estimated it stood about 50 or more feet tall, describing it as if Bigfoot went giant monster-sized. I'm not sure what to make of his report.
Lily considered this before responding carefully.
If he saw something, it must be something unique to this location. We were attacked by a creature of the Mosasaur lineage that had evolved to walk on two limbs. Whatever his Lacranio is, it seems to have species that either evolved from the time of the dinosaurs or are heavily influenced by magic. I suspect it's a bit of both.
Understood,
the man replied before asking.
And if this massive Sasquatch creature attacks?
Then someone must have provoked it, Lily said. That's why I denied any explosive-based exploration. Besides that, setting up magical protection runes is expensive and requires a calm, steady hand. It's why your equipment is working so well despite the massive amounts of magic on this island.
I see,
the man said.
So we're going to find a lot of new species here, aren't we?
Maybe even discover the ancestor of modern-day dragons,
Lily grinned before signing off. Rising from the metal folding chair, Lily stretched as she made her way outside, spotting her son in human form. Walking up to him, she hugged him tightly and sighed.
It's been a long few days, she muttered into his hair,
as her son slowly wrapped his arms around her.
Soon your dad will be here, and we can finish this survey before diving into the Skull Island exploration.
Harry simply nodded, having been unusually silent throughout these events. Bella grunted as she used her magic to seal the wound inflicted by Venatosaurus Claw. The unsavory creature had intruded into her territory, prompting her to try to drive it off. Initially, the signals from the pack had eluded her, but her temper flared when she cursed at the pack leaders to leave her face her wrath. Following through on her threat, she had fought off the young Venatosaurus, who had been trying to establish its own pack, resulting in its demise. Her greatest wound was to her pride, for getting slashed by something she felt should have been easy to avoid. Adding to her frustration, she sensed the shifting tides of magic and the unfamiliar scent of new humans on the island over the past few days. This constant disturbance had led to restless nights, further complicating her situation. Moreover, the primitive tribe had become more active than ever in recent summers. This resurgence did not bring her any comfort, only existential dread. She recalled her arrival in the tribe's central village among the ruins of their old civilization. The wretched humans had tried to capture and devour her. These humans, inbred horrors filled with dark magic, were like rats. She had witnessed other unspeakable terrors in the dark corners of their ruins and caves. Things that resembled humans, but clearly were not. Her knowledge of black family magic had saved her that day, allowing her to escape into the jungle and change into her new form. Sneering, she glowered at the shadowy Cranium Mountains, which harbored horrors even God would shun. Rising, her wound now healed, she turned her gaze away from those mountains. She needed rest before her next hunt for prey, which required a good night's sleep to pursue properly.
For the full text of this and other stories by the same author, visit the AO3 page of Gojira 126. Music from Jurassic Park for the Nintendo Game Boy, gratefully used by permission of composer John Dunn. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch with me using the contact info on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find links to other stories that I've read, my Discord server where you can attend live recordings of all of my ongoing projects, and various ways to support what I do. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.